It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Something goes wrong around the house and you want to fix it, right? Well, when is it time to do it yourself and when is it time to call a professional? We are going to do some home improvement triage this hour. And with us is Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert. And of course, in a few minutes, we'll be taking your calls and answering your questions. But first, hello, Bill.
Hi, Charity.
Put on your headphones.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. I'm just gawking around.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
So, all right. When something goes wrong, our first impulse, of course, is to fix it.
Well, yeah. Depends how much it costs.
Right. Absolutely. But how do you decide? I mean, obviously, you're in this business, so you do the stuff around your house yourself. But when something goes
wrong,
I
shouldn't. Yeah, okay.
What kind of thought process should you go through?
You know, I think a lot of people have seen so much TV. They've been on YouTube. They've been on the internet, and it's happened to me. It's given me this kind of false sense of security. Goes, hey, you know, that doesn't look as hard as it probably is. So, and then you realize that. That, you know, they took actually 12 hours to do that half hour show to make everything look good, and they didn't show all the things that did go wrong. People have to understand what their real comfort zone is. If, you know, especially when it comes to, let's say, electrical. Really, electrical is an area that, unless you have been trained in, you know, professionally trained in electrical work, you really shouldn't be messing with it. And you know, part of that comes back to basically safety for yourself, but also long-term safety, because a lot of things that maybe people will maybe throw together and think, hey, you know, I can put an outlet in or receptacle. Maybe it'll work for a while, but some of these electrical things take, you know, a period of time to show up. And you know, that's the bad thing, is you can actually cause something pretty serious. So, you know, I always look at it as if it's electric, you know, somewhat serious electrical work, especially for me, is you know, I've got a lot of friends that are electricians. But one good thing is, in a lot of communities, the building inspector is someone that you should use as a go-to person to find out if a project you're going to do, if first of all, does it require a permit, and are you allowed to do some of this work yourself? In our community, let's say if you want to do some electrical work, you can, but you have to follow all of the codes, which are pretty...
All right, so if you have the skill set, you can do it yourself as long as it's up to code.
You can as it's up to code, and a lot of times what they will do is they will help you. They'll come in and check and say, okay, yeah, that's okay at certain stages, and that's great. But, you know, then you've got to look at long-term, too, on some of this do-it-yourself is... You might have saved some money doing it yourself, or some self-gratification that you did it yourself. But let's say when you want to go sell the house and they find out you did the wiring as opposed to a licensed electrician, you may lose many times on the value of what it was. So, you know, you kind of have to always have that in the back of your mind.
So you have to think long-term about the value of your home. Are there other considerations, like insurance considerations as well?
There is, because, you know, a lot of insurance companies, in that fine print, it'll say that the work has to be done by a licensed contractor. And, you know, and if you're not a licensed contractor doing, say, plumbing work or electrical work on your house, and something happens catastrophic, they could possibly not cover it. So you may want to just stick with the real simple, you know, basic, like, you know, the caulking and maybe, you know, building a deck or something. But there again, you know, you have to go to your building inspectors and you know, maybe have to get a permit to do some certain things. Like, let's just say even a water heater. It really isn't that hard of a project to do. But there are some inherent issues with water heaters that you have to be aware of. They're sized for your home. You know, some of them have some issues with electrical because they might have a power vent system that vents it with a fan outside the combustion gases, and so, you know, you really want to look at, do I have a professional come in and maybe help me along, and they'll aid me? That may be a process for you, but the first thing is you want to think of the house as a system, and that's a well-worn term. But any little thing you do may cause a problem somewhere else in the house, especially in the plumbing, electrical, but even in the heating and cooling. You know, you think, well, I can buy a furnace off the internet, and all I've got to do is haul it down there and hook up a little gas line, you know, and squirt a little soap and water on it, make sure it hasn't leaked, and I'm fine. No, isn't how
all
that
right.
goes.
So you've mentioned electrical right away,
right.
which is just one of the areas where you clearly need to think long-term about the implications of doing the work yourself.
And short-term, and a lot of people have no business other than seeing if that breaker has got little orange showing. They have no business pulling those four screws off the cover and start doing wiring because they think it's easy, and it isn't.
So you also mentioned the furnace and the gas line, and I got to think that anything involving a gas line is something that you probably want to call a professional for, right?
Yeah, you really do. You know, even outside, you know, say I want to throw in a little gas line for my little fireplace outside. You know, everybody's getting these entertainment centers with the kitchens and the whole bit. And on TV, you say, oh, yeah, we'll do it ourselves. But, you know, you get a little gas leak someplace, and it starts to build up, and then you have a flame. I mean, obviously, that's not a good combination. And then you start digging around your house. You don't know if somebody's already has a gas line out there, and they just capped it off, and you're digging. I mean, there's all these little things that you want to research and to make sure that you're, you know, that you may bring in a professional to have them give you the scope of work, if nothing else. You know, this is what you have to do first. This is what you have to do second. And I hate to keep harping on it, but, you know, you do want to get a building inspector involved. And you don't want to say, oh, you know, they'll never notice this is on the back of the house. I don't have to get a permit. You know, down the road, you know, what if something happens?
All right. So we've got electric, gas
yep.
lines. How about plumbing, which is something that, you know, it's putting pieces of a puzzle together.
Yeah. You know, plumbing, some of the plumbing stuff, there's a lot of do-it-yourself plumbing things that you can do. You know, like maybe, you know, replacing a toilet wax ring, you know, if the toilet is leaking a little bit on the floor at the bottom, you know, that may be something. But, you know, there's a lot of little tricks to even lifting the toilet up and not getting water all over the place, you know, and properly connecting it to the floor and making sure that these sewer gases don't get in the house, even these simple things. But you know, like putting in sinks or traps, a lot of, you know, if you're pretty handy, a lot of people will go ahead and do those.
All right. Are there kind of plumbing red flags that maybe you think, oh, really, you shouldn't tackle that one yourself?
Yeah. You know, if it gets into some serious running water line somewhere, especially soldering. I mean, I've soldered my whole life. And the other day I was helping my son-in-law, and I just could not get, you know, this. We were marrying a soft copper line to a hard one, and we were just having one heck of a time, you know. And he was completely losing faith in me there for a while. And I finally finished it. But that was
redeemed
something.
Redeemed yourself?
Yeah, you know, we were just putting in a new faucet in the shower. And it shouldn't have been that big of a deal, but it was. And so, you know, we knew how to do it. It just things weren't going as well. And any plumber knows that what I'm saying especially is that sometimes just things just don't work out. And other parts did. But when you look at soldering especially, I mean, there's been a lot of problems caused when people try to solder things together. So then they'll go out to a big box store, and they see these cute little fittings that, oh, hey, I don't need it to solder or glue. You just put them over the lines, and you tighten these two nuts, and it's great. Well, it may be great for a while, and then they'll start to leak. Or in some cases, if you have a lot of pressure in your water lines, they'll blow off, and they could blow off when you're gone, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, 6 inches of water in your basement. So some of these little quick fixes, those really make me nervous, the ones that are, you know, temporarily fix a line because, you temporarily need to put it on there, but, you know, I don't need to.
20 years later.
Yeah, the game's on today. I don't really need to go down and fix it. It's fine. You know, those make me really nervous when you see these quick fixes advertised, you know.
Well, and with plumbing, when it's a clean water line as opposed to dealing with waste, is there a sort of a difference in your mind there about whether you should tackle it or not?
Oh, I remember my dad used to have rental buildings, and I can still remember when I was probably 13, 14, he had me working underneath a second floor toilet that was leaking. And I'll never forget that, you know. And I, that's when I'll say, Dad, why don't you hire somebody? Well, why? He's got me, you know. And those are scary. So when you, yeah, when you get to a sewer line as opposed to, you know, clear water, of course, the sewage lines aren't under pressure, but they might as well be. I mean, they're, it's just scary stuff to work with. And it can be very dangerous as well. But water lines, especially clean water lines, like say hot or cold, there may be a very, very small leak that you don't know, but it can be caused inside the walls. And then you're looking at, you know, rotting materials and mold. And so a lot of times those are where you really want to get a professional involved.
What about roofing or siding?
The roof, because the siding, you know, vinyl siding, that mostly that's a piece of cake for anybody. It's very simple. Now, wood siding, you know, wood siding it takes usually someone that has some pretty good measurement skills, but we still see a lot of wood siding and cement siding and some of the OSB, oriented strand board sidings, going on houses without having a rain screen behind them, which means that there should be a little bit of space. It's kind of becoming the industry standard, but we don't see it near enough. Let's say cement board, it's mostly wood, but there's cement in it. When that's put on a house correctly with some space behind it, you know, mine's been on my house for 16 years and all paint's just faded. You know, you don't get paint peeling and things as long as the siding can breathe. So there's, you know, depending on what kind of siding you're putting on, you want to really read the directions. That's, I think, all of us are guilty of, okay, you know, we skip over a few lines. You know, there's so many little things let's say you want to build a garage yourself. That's not really a real big deal. But, you know, it takes some framing skills and measurement skills. But even just, you know, putting the sheets of OSB, the sheathing that goes over the outside of the studs before you put the siding on and that. You know, most people don't leave the quarter-inch gaps that's required between the sheets. You know, even the quarter-inch gaps around the windows and doors, they all try to – we're Iowans. We try to make things nice and tight. And so we need to start reading directions, too, on any do-it-yourself
project.
Pay
attention to details.
Yes.
Take your time.
Yes.
Measure twice, cut once. I've heard something like that.
Yeah, I'm usually the other way around. Cut twice and it's still too short.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your home improvement questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our home improvement day today on Talk of Iowa. Bill McAnally is here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've been talking about how to figure out when to do it yourself and when to call a professional, and Bill can answer those questions if you have a project that you're waffling on a little bit. But, of course, we'll also answer any of the questions about the projects on your to-do list.
You'll at least get the opinion.
Yeah. Right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Let's start with an email from Mary in Des Moines. I have a flooring question. My kitchen floor is 23-year-old tile. Apparently, the base wasn't good because many of the tiles have cracked. I want a new floor. Can we put new flooring over the tile? If the tile has to be removed, how do we do that? And after the tiles are gone, how should I prepare the base for new flooring?
I would take, you know, if the base was bad, I'd take it all the way down, take the tile off, and then check the sheeting that's below it. You never want to add on top of something that isn't a good base. A lot of the tiles you can rent at wherever you would buy your flooring. Usually, they'll have a tile remover. It's kind of like a moving huge chisel, basically, that chips the tile and pulls it up. Some, depending on the tile that it is, some can be heated with a small heat gun, basically kind of a glorified hair dryer. But you do have to be a little bit careful depending on the age, because some of the tile have asbestos in them and you don't want any of that dust whatsoever getting into the house. You know, you want to take a picture, take a sample to your flooring person and ask them, you know, is this asbestos tile or not? And then they'll help you on remediating that issue. But, yeah, you should take it down as far as you can. You may end up going all the way down to the original floor sheeting and then working your way back up. And then each tile manufacturer, they kind of have a specification on what type of underlayment, whatever goes underneath the tile, what layers and what strength, because they need to know how far apart your floor joists are. And there's quite a bit to that because you don't want to repeat what's happened. And especially ceramic tile, we've gone to the bigger tile. You know, a lot of people are putting in, that's a lot, maybe 16-inch square. Well, if you have a hump in your floor on a 16-inch square, if you put the center of that over the top of the hump, you get a crack down the road. So, yeah, there's a lot of prep. You may have to even level the floor, put some.
What do you consider to be the life of a well-installed tile floor?
The life of the house,
okay.
If it's put down correctly, or until the person, doesn't like it, which is usually what I think national average is, 10 years now, 10 or 11 years. It's ridiculous.
Maybe you don't have to do a good job.
Just get another rug.
Right. But so this is another situation. Very carefully read the directions.
Yeah.
Or if it seems too complicated, give somebody a call.
It is. Because the complications come in where the appliances are and now changing floor heights from one room to another. If I take it down, now am I an inch lower than the dining room? There's all these little nuances that you have to look out for. Even the door. If I put a new floor in, is it on top of what's there, your doors may not even open. And if it's an exterior door going outside, that's a little more serious than just one going into
your
dining room.
Wrapped in the house.
Is this enough?
Right?
This is great. Yeah. Well, at least you're in the kitchen.
All right. That doesn't matter when you run out of food. Here's a question from Patty. My central air furnace unit keeps blowing a fuse. I keep replacing it. What's the real problem?
Well, that's where you call the heating and cooling person, because there's an electrical issue there and you want to get it taken care of, because that fuse, it basically is sensing that there's too much current for that particular fuse. And what some people will do is, it's a 15 amp. I'll go buy a 20 amp fuse, which handles more. Well, yeah, the fuse will handle it, but the wire won't. And so the wire feeding on that circuit can overheat and cause a fire. So if it's blowing, there's something going on in that circuit that you need to take care of now, because she mentioned the furnace, but I assume that, since that's her air handler, it's during this cooling season as well. So something is going on there that you need to have a professional look at that one.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Let's go to the phones. Fred is on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Fred.
Hey there. This old house one time, they were talking about some kind of a valve that you put on where your water source comes in from, wherever you get your water from. And if something breaks inside the house, that automatically shuts off the water source. What do you call that valve?
I don't know, because I haven't had any experience. I've read a couple articles on it, but I can't recall the name of it either. But, I assume that it senses that there's just such a huge release in the back pressure that it would shut off. It'd be some sort of a check valve is all it is, but that would be if it's in. Are you in the town of Grinnell?
No, out in the country.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just check with your plumber. I'm sure he'd be aware of it. Because in the cities, you'd have to go with your, go check with the city water works. But yeah, I can't remember what it is, but it would be similar to what they have in the basements. There's a on the other side of like your expansion tank and that on your house, all of a sudden it senses that and it shuts it down, like when you're on vacation. And I can't remember what it is, but it's some sort of a pressure check valve.
All right, that sounds.
Sorry, Fred. Oh, okay.
We had downspouts. Well, anyway, the downspouts go in down to the ground, and then we had somebody put some tile in to run the water clear out down to the road ditch.
Okay.
And it's not that big of a house, but on these gully washer rains, it runs out over the gutters on, onto the ground next to the house.
Yeah.
Should we put in bigger gutters?
You can put in bigger gutters or,
they're going to affect that 4-inch tile that's in the ground. Is it going to be able to handle it?
Well, that's the issue. Is
6-inch tile?
Yeah, it can only take so much. It kind of goes back to you can figure up how much is going to go through that tile by going to the old, pi r squared stuff and figuring the volume of that and all. But it could overload it. But But usually it isn't going to, you know, if you have a six inch gutter and it's going right. to a 6 inch tile, they're roughly the same. But the downside is a lot of people will get a bigger gutter, but they don't upgrade the downspout itself going down. But a lot of times on a gully washer, it's, you know, there's so much velocity coming down the roof, it just flies right over it anyway.
Right.
So okay, I just want to make sure you got plenty of slope away from the house, you know, like six
plenty
inches.
Slope.
Oh,
plenty,
good,
plenty
good.
Slope.
Yeah.
By the time you get to the road from the house, there's probably, well, it's, I don't know, it's 30% angle, something
oh,
like that.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's good. And a lot of people, if they, you know, what they'll do is they'll put gravel down there so that there's no erosion
right.
as well. Sure.
All right, Fred,
thanks
a lot
yeah,
for
thanks.
Your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Carl is up next in Fairfield. Hi, Carl.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question regarding sweating slab syndrome.
Okay.
I have a garage floor that sweats when it gets warm and humid.
Yep.
It's a new house. It's about 5 years old.
Yep.
And it's definitely coming from the air. I tested, you know, putting a piece of plastic on the floor. It's not coming up through the slab.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm wondering, when they put the slab in, they polished it fairly highly. In other words, it doesn't have a rough surface.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if that may, if I were to remove that, I heard of a procedure called shot blasting where they take the top little layer of concrete off, if that would help the moisture to be absorbed into the slab when it gets hot like that, rather than being really slick and wet.
No, it really isn't going to affect anything. What when we do new projects now for garages, we specify 2 inches of extruded foam underneath the floor because
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's there.
Well, there yeah, if they're well. Usually you won't get that. The only reason that you're getting that is because the slab and the air temperature, you know, are different because, you know,
right.
we get so much humidity because, like, farmers can always relate, you know, that in the spring their slabs in their shop or, you know, whatever tools they left, they're always rusty because they left them on that slab. I don't know that doing anything to the surface is really going to do anything because I think that water is just because of condensation between the warm air and the cool slab. That's, you know, that there, yeah. Do you think that they did put 2 inches of foam under it? Because most don't. I mean,
I'm pretty sure. I know, well, the whole perimeter of the foundation, without a doubt, has 2 inches of foam around it, including the garage.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they put it under the slab as well.
Yeah, usually if you have it under the slab, you're not going to have that condensation issue. I would check with them, but other than that, you know, you're kind of stuck unless you get some air movement across the top, and some have done that, you know, to eliminate that moisture. They just put
I tried that. It only made it worse.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You know what I would do is, in your particular case, I like to call the Iowa Ready Mix Association and ask them. They're very knowledgeable and they're very, very helpful. So in your particular case, they should be able to run down what, you know, a lot of different steps and try to figure out what it is. But it's the Iowa Ready Mix Association.
Okay. I appreciate that.
You bet.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Next up, Bob in Fort Dodge. Hi, Bob.
Oh. Hi. Hey, I was just wondering, I redid my basement and I put a cement door outdoor carpet and I very, very seldom get moisture because I put a sump pump in prior to doing all the work. But once in a blue moon I do, and is that okay with just, you know, to clean it up and disinfect the carpet and then just right back to normal? Or, or could I cause myself trouble?
You could cause yourself some issues. You know, if it does get wet, that's a case where you're just better off maybe putting down, you know, 12-inch vinyl tile or ceramic tile down instead of carpet. Because it is still kind of chancy to, even when we disinfect, you know, or really think we've got that clean, that there still could be enough remedial moisture that once you put it back down on the floor that, like the previous caller, you can get some condensation issues and then the mold, you know, can still be there or start growing. You know, it's kind of an indoor air quality issue. In some cases, what people have done as well is they've installed a radon system, and it's becoming somewhat common now for basements that they're kind of damp, is they just use a radon system to basically pull the moisture from the soil, from underneath the floor and around the foundation, that moisture vapor out and vent it. It causes a negative pressure in the basement, which sucks the moisture down through the slab and through the soil and then out through this vent. And that's another option, especially if you have a radon reading that, you know, that's somewhat elevated, then that's a good option for you as well. But I wouldn't do the indoor the carpet. I would just go with the tile.
Oh, okay. What I had was the indoor-outdoor carpet. Does that matter?
Yeah, you know, what it is it's kind of neat. The University of Minnesota years ago, I think it was 1993, they did a huge study with the carpet industry, and they found that basically anything like carpet or carpet padding or, you know, rugs you leave a long time in basements, that they tend to have elevated mold issues, just because that indoor carpet, even though it's, you know, it's thin and everything, it kind of acts like a little bit of an insulator, and it keeps the slab a little bit cooler, you know, tendency to the ground temperature. And then that temperature difference a lot of times will cause condensation underneath. And even if you didn't have your occasional wettings, you know, from a rain or something. So they recommended that no carpets be put in basements. I've kind of held to that because the people that did the testing were extremely knowledgeable and a lot smarter than anything I would ever be. So I always go by what they say. And it's held up pretty good for me so far. But I would just maybe get rid of it, and maybe if you're going to have a play area, you know, have a rug that you can put up and down.
What kind of basement floors do you like, Bill?
I really like the polished ones, polished basement floors,
polished
stained
cement.
Floor, yeah, stained or ceramic tile. You know, unless you put foam underneath the floor. If you put foam, you know, like, say, sheets of 2 inches of extruded polystyrene, you know, the foams that are like blue, pink, green, something like that, underneath the slab, then you can put carpet over the top, because then that keeps the concrete to the same temperature as the inside of the house. You don't get the condensation. So
Okay. Everything,
even at Iowa Central when I was there, soon as we found out about this finding, I think we were like on the fourth residence hall at the time. After that, every slab we did, we always put foam underneath it. And in every garage slab, we have them put foam underneath. Even if they're not going to use radiant heat, we have them put foam so we don't have that condensation like Carl did.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Bob, thanks a lot for your
call.
Thanks. Next up, we've got Lynn in Iowa City. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I have a question about smoke alarms. We're in a house that's probably about 10 years old. We've been here 8 years. The alarms are all wired together, and they also have a battery.
Mm-hmm.
Since we've been here, we've changed. There was a point where we changed all the batteries. And just this summer, one started going off, and then one would go off again. So we had new batteries, and we tried replacing all of them because they kept going off. When we got them all replaced, the alarms still kept going off. And two of the alarms, smoke alarms, are really high, and my husband and I are in our 60s. And so we couldn't get it stopped, so we just unplugged them all.
Oh, no. Okay.
I did call the fire marshal, and he said smoke alarms really are only good for about 10 years.
Okay.
So I guess my question is, should we call an electrician? Yeah. What's our next step?
Yeah, I would have an electrician come in and put the newer ones in. They're a little better than the ones that were 10 years old as well, but you should disguise your voice so your insurance person doesn't hear you talking about taking So start talking a little lower here.
So you don't know that she didn't.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, my name really is not Lynn.
No, it isn't Lynn. No, it's Roger. No, I would call him an electrician and have him take care of that, because, you know, there could be something in the wiring as well. You know, over the years, something may have, you know, somebody may have walked in the attic and stepped on a wire or something like that. So, you know, I would have him check the whole system for you.
All right, Lynn, thanks a lot
That's
for your
question.
Call, and a good reminder to all of us to check out our our smoke alarms. We'll see if we can do this quick question here from Richard. We have an old toilet drain in our basement. Whenever we run our furnace, it brings that smell up from the basement. How can we remedy that?
There's where you call a plumber, because something is missing. What may have happened is that there's a little clean out on the floor drains, and a lot of times if your floor drain is actually plugged, the trap underneath it, some people will pull this little clean out cap out and then leave it out, and then so that means that those gases can be pulled into the house. So something's causing a negative pressure in the house and pulling the gases in. So get a plumber over there as soon as you can, because sewer gases aren't talked about a lot, but they can cause some real physical issues.
All right, they're not just unpleasant.
No, they're not just unpleasant.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, on Talk of Iowa. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to answer your questions about the projects in your life. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to the phones. Michael's on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Michael.
Morning.
Morning.
Flooring seems to be the topic this morning. I have a question on floating tile. Have you dealt with that at all?
As far as sitting on top of foam or on top of a floating plywood floor?
My situation is I have a lake cabin that's a concrete slab. And the people we bought it from put a laminate down, and that is like spongy and everything. And I want to replace it. Just wondering, I'm thinking about that floating tile because I don't want to go through the mastic and stuff. Have you had any experience with that?
No. You know, the only experience I've had with that was with wheelchairs, is how the wheels on a wheelchair kept causing issues on the joints, kind of kept snapping some of those apart and delaminating them. That's the only issue, other than, when you put, let's say you'll put some sheets of foam down over the floor and then plywood, and then you could put any kind of flooring you want down over the floor, then it's long term. You'll never have that, spongy issue. But the only downside with that sometimes is, especially if it's in a lower level, then that changes your first step going up the stairs and, doors and things like that. So, but no, other than that, but I would check with the manufacturers as well, because the kind of foam that they lay down underneath the tile, it's not a complete vapor barrier, that moisture can come up through that. It takes a long time, but moisture can get through that, and it kind of depends, especially if you're by a lake, if that water table's high, that slab may be damp all of the time. So I would really, check with the flooring people, even go past the dealer and call the manufacturer, and say, okay, this is right. My situation, because they'll tell you straight up, because they don't want you calling them later. So I've gotten really good results calling manufacturers, going right past the dealers and telling them exactly what I'm doing. I would double check, because each manufacturer is different, and it becomes down to, okay, what's the moisture level, what's the humidity in that room as well. Will the product that you put down be able to take that type of humidity?
And I really won't have any idea what the concrete is like until I get that floor up.
Good point. That's a real good point. Yeah. So that's when you can make your judgment call and take some pictures, and someone may have a moisture sensor that you can borrow that you can put the prongs right on the concrete, and then you can find out what the moisture is, and have some definitive numbers and background that when you talk to someone, you could pretty much give them the information, they can make an intelligent and informed decision.
All right, Michael, thank you so much for your call. And,
yeah, thanks.
Sticking with the flooring questions, this
wow.
one's from Katie. Ever since moving into a ground floor condo, my feet have been hurting. It appears that the kitchen floor was installed over the slab floor with no padding.
Mm-hmm.
I want to replace the kitchen vinyl with something else. Any suggestions about how much padding?
No, you may want to, you know, it depends if she owns it or if she's renting it, for one thing. But if you own it.
And she's replacing it, I'm guessing.
Yeah,
she owns
I would
it.
Think so, too. But, you know, you may want to just look at something like cork or a thicker product and skip the pad, because there are some nice thick floor tile.
Have a little bit of give,
yeah, because, you know, because they've used them in schools, you know, where, like around science labs and that, where, you know, people don't like to be on a solid terrazzo floor or concrete floor, you're right. You know, it was done because it was expanse. You just throw it down and you're in and out of there. But, I would look at some other tile that are specifically made, especially maybe your feet, need a little bit more. Because, you know, you're in your house, you have a tendency more to be in your bare feet or stocking feet, you know. So there are some thicker tile that give a little bit and skip the padding.
Okay.
I think it'd be a little bit better system for you, especially in a kitchen.
All right. And a floor specialist should be able to help her figure out what would make her more comfortable.
Yes,
right?
They would.
She's not the only person to have this problem.
No, she isn't. The other thing is, the softer the floor, when you drop something, you know, like say you drop a dish or glass or something, you know, there's a little less issues too with breakage.
All right. Spoken from experience.
Very much so.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Tom is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, this is my situation. Can you hear me okay?
You bet.
Yep.
Okay. I have a clay brick foundation.
All right.
Okay, and over by where the water comes into the house, I don't know if that's important. There's also a window above this area, but the clay brick is kind of like it's flaking away.
Yeah. Yep.
And I was thinking that maybe the old masonry is fixed, where I need to take that window out, which I have covered up anyway, and get some really loose mix cement and just keep getting it packed down in there. I know they used to do that to keep moisture from entering, but I didn't know if that was the solution in this case or what would be recommended.
Are these the clay block, the hollow core glazed block, or are they real just clay brick? I mean, like the 2.5?
They're clay block. They're bigger than what you would have for a normal block. And they were actually made in the Mason City brick plant.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
That's where their origin is.
Yeah, because we've got the same thing in the Fort Dodge area. They were made around our area, but they're little smaller ones. But, you know, the problem with them is that, you know, they had the grooves on the top of that block where the mason would let the would set his mortar. And if water can get in, like, say, where that window is, you know, I think you're onto something, because if that water can get in and then it'll trickle down between the joints and it'll lay there in those grooves and it'll kind of sometimes – either come in or blow the surface off of either side, sometimes with frost in there. But I would excavate on the outside and really try to find what could possibly be. And I would lay some have a mason come in, or if you lay brick or block, you know, I would fill that in and then maybe use glass block as for your light if you need it, or else get rid of it completely. But if you can excavate that, then maybe you can waterproof that area as well if you can get it super clean.
I see. Yeah, put some waterproofing like that.
Yeah.
Stuff on it.
Yeah, you know, and I would get this. I wouldn't get the products that are in a bucket. You know, like the waterproofing stuff that, you know, it's like for 5 gallons for $5. I'd get like a bitumen product that is a real heavy bodied roll on, or it comes in a sheet. But you want an actual heavy bodied waterproofing.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that would help you, because I really like those basements are very strong. It's just that if water gets in them, then there's so many places for it to lay.
Well, and what I thought is if this is happening here, years ago they put drywall in the basement, which just regular old standard drywall.
Oh.
And I'm going to get rid of that.
Good.
I want to get rid of that because I happen to know that the things happening behind that might not be very good.
Yeah, no, they aren't. No, I get that out of there as soon as you can. Yep.
Okay. So you would recommend getting that done. So I thought, maybe that's job one, get that done, and then inspect the rest of the foundation and see how extensive the job is.
Yeah, and then, if everything's easy to get to, that'd be a good time to maybe install, some 2 inches of sheet foam, like extruded foam over the inside, and then you can put up some steel studs or wood studs, and then you could drywall, but at least then you kind of save some energy as well. But, yeah, that's a good idea because pulling that sheetrock off, you're right. I bet the backside of that stuff's probably black. But at least get it out of there, and then you can really check that foundation out, check if there's any bows or anything like that, severe cracks.
All right, Tom, yep. Good luck. And here's a question from Ben in Washington. After rearranging some things in our basement underneath a stack of concrete blocks, we found a strange circular hole in the corner. It is 12 to 18 inches in diameter. There is water in it. We do not have a sump pump. The basement is relatively dry, but down a couple of feet in the hole, there is water. Yep. Separately, we have a drain about 8 feet away near a washer. The house is about 100 years old. Should we get the water out, fill it in, pretend we never saw it? What the heck is that thing?
It's probably what the original sump pump, because they in a lot of the older houses, they just used an old, 12 or 16 or 18-inch farm tile and just used that for your sump pit hole. So I would use that.
You put a sump pump in it?
I just in case. I mean, just saying, they haven't had water, but they might sometime. Get a sump pump system in and seal the lid so that the moisture doesn't keep coming out of that hole. But I put a sealed lid, a nice system on there with the sump pump, and
just put cinder blocks over it again?
No. Yeah. Put the box back. I mean, what's the problem? What kind of a question is that? Yeah. No, I would utilize that. I really would. Because the thing is, that's pumping a ton of moisture into your house as well, which isn't the best thing. And it could be sewer gases. And then, if it's a really old farmhouse, you never know what kind of water is in there. Right, Charity? Yeah.
Yep.
I would put a sump pump system. That's just me. But I would, if not, then just put a seal, a cover over the top of it. And what I kind of like is maybe a half inch thick or plexiglass and use some rubber sealant and lay it down over the top. That holds the gases and the waters. And then you can look down in there and see if the water's coming up or down.
Just a fun hobby.
You got to have something to do in the winter.
All right. Here, let's go back to the phones. Jim is up next in Cedar Falls. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes.
My question is, about 20 years ago, I put vinyl siding on my 60s ranch-style house, which I could figure out how to do that, but I didn't put anything behind it. I just put it right on the wood siding that was there that I didn't want to paint.
Sure.
And so I put nothing there. There's no insulation. There's no, sheet to stop anything. And so can I pull that siding back off and put something there to help to insulate my home better?
Yeah, you can. I would here's the only issue with doing that is you got to really be careful. You got to do it on a really nice warm day so you don't break any of that vinyl because, you'll never match that color. You could pull that off very gently, take that off, and then I would pull the existing siding off and then put foam, sheets of, extruded foam over it, and then house wrap and then seal around all your windows with like a good quality flashing tape, not just, red or Tyvek tape or something like that, a good flashing tape. And then wrap the house with, a house wrap, and then put your vinyl on. The problem occurs is when the reason I'm telling you to really be sure and take that old siding off is because you're going to be expanding the outside perimeter of the house if you put insulation over the top of your old siding. And then that makes the distances longer. Then the corners that you have aren't going to fit because your wall dimensions have changed. So I'd pull the old siding off. And then that's also a good time. If you pull the old siding off on a 60s house, it probably has fuzz board or plywood for sheeting. But you just want to add some insulation, and that's really going to make a big difference. A friend of mine just did that, and you can't believe the sound difference especially. But, yeah, I'd put the insulation, but I take that old siding off. Then you can check if there's any structural issues. That also is a good time to have an electrician come in and add additional receptacles on the outside of the wall or to the outside. He can do all that work from the outside and not mess around with the drywall on the inside that way as well.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for your call. And next, we'll try to squeeze in one more question. Kirk in Muscatine. Hi, Kirk.
Hi, how are you guys this morning?
Great.
Good. What's your question?
Well, I'm working on an older trailer that has PEX plumbing in it, and it's constantly failing. It's about 20 years old, and if you just look at one of the connections, it'll start leaking. it's the crimp style.
Oh, okay. You know, crimp yeah.
Them. And, yeah. And I've done some repairs on it, and I've been using that shark bite stuff.
Okay.
And what is the shark bite stuff, Bill?
It's just a little bit of gripping system.
Okay.
That's what you're using, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
For all the repairs, but I'm going to be doing like a whole bathroom and such. Do you think I should go and get a crimper? Or should I continue on with the shark bite? I mean, do they fail in 20 years? Or?
You know, I would switch to the newest product and connectors that you can possibly get for yourself, because some of the older, you know, when that PEX, I know it's because it, they say it doesn't, but it gets, you know, have you noticed it's a little more brittle?
So
you know, that's why I somehow start. I kind of like treating it like a brand new circuit for a room for electrical. Is I do that whole thing in brand new PEX and fittings, and then
okay.
because that you'd eliminate any issues with that, and if you could at any time, at least a little bit at a time, go back and replace as much of that as you can. Because that does make me nervous that it, you know, that it has dried, you know, it will. I mean, that's what happens to plastic. It as it gradually deteriorates, becomes more brittle. And so, you know, then no matter what kind of connections you have, they tend to lose their ability to hold that under pressure. So, I would just start right fresh as far back as you can.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep, thanks.
Kirk, thanks a lot for your call. And we don't have time to take another call, but I will pass this one along from Danielle in Woodward. She wants to install a mini-split air conditioner to drain excess moisture in her log cabin.
Okay.
Should she get a professional to install it, or is that a DIY project?
Well, you know, you can buy the do-it-yourself ones, but I would have a professional do that one in her case, because they have to be sized accordingly. You can buy them, the do-it-yourself ones, but It you know, like if it's for a garage or some temporary stuff, they're okay. But if it's for a cabin, you know, you may want to, especially in the area, get a professional to do that one, because it has to be sized correctly. And then you do have a warranty. I didn't really care about the one that I did. You know, I want to get a professional. And then if anybody's interested in air tightening, we've got a Iowa State Center on Sustainable Communities has a deal in Fairfield on 19th on air sealing at 7 o'clock at night. I know that's coming up too through Iowa State. So.
All right, you said the September 19th.
September 19th at the library at 7 o'clock in Fairfield.
All right, Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Charity. That was fun.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, comes by once a month to answer your questions about your home improvement projects. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.